The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا, O you who believe, استعينوا بالصبر والصلاة.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear audience of IRIB English Radio, now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sayyid Asad Jafari.
Cultivating an Islamic identity has been an ongoing topic. The past two nights we have been looking at the components of an Islamic identity. We talked about the I-ness inside of us, the who-ness inside of us. But ultimately, the question of identity is a question when we answer the question of who are we? And I mentioned to all of you that within Islamic theology is a whole comprehensive talk about the I inside of us, that immaterial I, that ruhi mujarrad, that's not bound by space or time or does not or is not found inside the physical world. And it is an I that we need to constantly work on to build, to strengthen, to preserve. And one such way to do that was the talk from yesterday, which was about the power of our thoughts. And how sometimes the way we think defines who we are. And hopefully you didn't forget my six-link chain. Fikr and mail, fa'il and khulq, malaka and thought, inshallah. That a thought can very easily become our actions, that can become our disposition, that can become somebody we are known as. And my purpose last night was to talk about the triggers of our thought and to my young guys to understand the power of those triggers. Now, one point I wanted to make as a correction or an addition from last night was that I'm not asking any of you or myself to be surrounded by only the ma'sumin or the infallible. Of course not. There will be moments where the negativity is inside of you. There's thoughts that are quite toxic, that are quite destructive in nature. Sometimes they enter into our thoughts. Sometimes we have a bad day, and sometimes we just want to shut the world off. I'm not saying to be a robot, nor am I being unrealistic to think that we always have to have positive thoughts. My only point yesterday was, do not underestimate the power of your thoughts. And where you're able now to kind of cultivate those planters of those seeds of thought, then choose those cultivators carefully. Be it your spouse, be it your friends, be it what you watch or what you listen to, all of that has an impact on who you are. And in tonight's discussion, I want to look at the idea that identity and the cultivation of it actually is a mind, body, and soul reality. The problem that I see, or the challenge I see inside of myself, and maybe inside of all of you, is that we have begun to kind of look at religion in general as only a spiritual reality, submitting to a higher power, right? Even to the point where now today's lingo is the idea that, you know, if you talk about a higher power, there's even some sort of a refrain from mentioning the word God. God's been replaced to a higher power, a spiritual being. And, you know, one thing I have not kind of defined, because it doesn't have a clear-cut definition, is part of my title of the series was a postmodern era. Now, postmodernism is a concept, not a one-line definition. But to understand postmodernism is to understand modernism. And in the era of modernism, it was accepted that there was one clear-cut truth and one clear-cut path. In a postmodernist world, the idea is that all paths are equal. It's a very pluralistic approach. Everyone is right. There's no one absolute truth. There's no one religion or path that can claim to have monopoly of what is haq. And so it is a wide, liberal era that we live in. to the point where even when something is blatantly wrong, we can't speak out against it. Because that would make us intolerant. And intolerance is frowned upon. And one of the areas of this postmodernism, when it comes to religion, is has nothing to do with the physical. In fact, you know, there are PhDs written on the cultivation of Islamic identities. And a lot of the writers that I had read, they all talk about one of the most effective barriers that society now has placed in front of our kids to avoid this Islamic identity is to keep the religion only spiritual. It's between you and God. It's in your heart. What you do outside in terms of the external world and your body has nothing to do with your spirit. It's a very private thing. In fact, a lot of my youth say it's none of anyone's business how I dress, where I go, how I speak, what I wear. Nobody. It's between me and God. It's a very individualistic and fard girayi, as they say in Farsi, concept. It's me, myself, and God. And as we know, and I've spoken about this many, many times, Islam is far from an individualistic religion. In fact, where there is an individualism and a community, a collectivism discussion, it absolutely says to go down the collective. And so long as they are, whoever they are trying to pull our youth away from the path, they succeed in limiting religion to be nothing but a spiritual reality, they've succeeded. Because now what ends up happening, doesn't matter what I do to my body, how I show my body, where I go, what I listen to, what I drink, what I eat, hijab or no hijab, how I look at a non-mahram, none of that is connected to religion. It's me, it's my spirit, and that's all that matters. There's a whole movement out there, SBNR, spiritual but not religious. Whole movement. They have a whole website. They have a whole, absolutely. The idea that, yes, I believe in a higher power, I'm not confined to organized religion. Because organized religion is for the churches and the synagogues and the masajid. It's for the priests and the rabbis and the imams. I'm good with God. I understand God. He's in my heart. That's all that matters. Whether or not that actually results in me living a physical life that resembles that religion is irrelevant. And this has to be addressed. The Islamic identity is mind, body, and soul. And there's an absolute interdependence and a codependence on these three elements. And inshallah, I'll present to you some discussions, some proofs from history, from the Quran, from Hadith, that tell us that yes, absolutely, it's important for us to look the part, feel the part, and believe the part. Because, you know, discussions like modesty. Why does Islam get to define what modesty is? In terms of how a sister should dress, or how a brother should act. If I am wearing modest clothing, that's up to me. I can define that. As I mentioned a couple of nights ago, why do I have to pray the way he says? I meditate. All these discussions are happening more and more. And there are some of my youth who are bold and ask. There are some who internally kind of have these questions and they leave them there. And that's even more dangerous sometimes. They don't go out and actually clear up the doubts. Because the reality is that before even the spirit is even developed and the heart is even ready, it's the body that initially now begins the path of spirituality. Sometimes we have no idea as children. Some of my young kids in the audience, they fast because everyone else is fasting. They pray, they have no idea why they're bowing down, why they're prostrating, why it's 2 sujood, 1 ruku, no idea, but they're doing it.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karimun Adi Alimun Hali Hakimun Mati. غفور شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صل عليه.